Welcome to the Parented Podcast. I'm Michelle Gams. Join me as we explore the hardest job that you'll ever love, parenting your child. Today we talk with Meredith, who is a rock star mom of four kids under eight. She has no significant technology in her home yet, a true Renaissance woman. We discuss how to love your children uniquely, not equally, as that will never occur, repairing our mistakes when we mess up, as we will, and that gift of mother guilt that each of us inherits the minute we give birth.
Hi, Meredith.
Hi.
Okay, let's start with who's in your family.
So we have my husband, and then we have four kids, 8, 6, 3.5, and almost 2.
Okay. Impressive.
Yeah. Busy.
Yes. Okay, and tell me about you.
I do more than I think I do. we own our own business, which is really great and also stressful at times because we're growing pretty quickly. And I am like the business manager, but I also stay at home with the kids.
Okay.
So I often feel pulled in a lot of different directions.
Of course.
And I was a big athlete in high school and college and not a native Hoosier, but we're here now and it's really great.
Okay. It's a great place to raise kids.
Yeah.
It is. Okay. So what would we like to start with today?
I think, probably I have some questions on how to there will always be chaos in a large family, but how to kind of...
There's chaos in small families.
Right. There are so many different personalities and extroverts and introverts and kind of figuring out how to give everybody their own space is something that we're really working on right now.
Okay.
I would say my two bookends are major extroverts, even in just a little bit of time in their short little lives so far. And my middle ones are more introverted and need kind of a little bit more quiet time. My boys both have some sensory issues, which can add a level of just stress at times, especially my 3.5-year-old. And he needs kind of a lot of one-on-one eye contact and things that when I'm not fully present, it's hard for me to give that to him. And then he'll have bigger meltdowns, which then trigger the other kids. So it's overwhelming. So figuring out kind of how to balance that, I think, or to create enough of a structure within our home where everybody's feeling heard and getting what they need.
Okay. All right. Eye contact. Attention equals love.
Yep.
So when you attend to me, I feel loved. And you've got four of them. So I can see how, especially when they're young too.
Yeah.
Like they are 8 and under. And it's like a payment or a deposit into my bank account over here. When you do that to me, then I go, okay, my mom loves me, and I go about my business. And then some kids can thrive on that for a while. And some kids there's more of an appetite for it. And you're recognizing that some are extroverts, some are introverts. And so, I just sort of without knowing a whole lot yet. We will never love our children equally. Give that up.
Okay.
Don't expect that of yourself. Love them uniquely.
Okay.
According to what they need. Because they are unique. And just because you've done something for one does not mean, oh, I got to go do that for the other. Because they may not need that. They need something else. And so, I don't know. Have you ever heard of the 5 love languages?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's helpful to diagnose in your family.
Okay.
Whose love language is what? Because then you love each other, efficiently. Like you know what the bullseye is. It's So among the five, do you know what they are? That I'll just name them. Acts of service, do something for me. Words of affirmation, tell me what you recognize about me, affirm me. Physical touch, which, you know, affection, but and some kids like to, you know, they like to be touched differently. And that sex is addressed too for adults, that it's not just about that. Gifts, which is some kind of physical, tangible exchange between us. It could be a sticker, a note. It doesn't have to be, it's not grand necessarily. It just is some kind of physical, tangible thing. And then, quality time. So when you can, and it's not that all of those aren't lovely, because they are all lovely, but typically one or two resonate more for each of us, and same for your four beautiful people. Mm-hmm. And so it's, if you can know that with each of them, it helps you be on alert for when theirs is sort of on red, you know, then you can love them uniquely. So for instance, Charlie was, my son was, quality time. And so I spent a lot of time, watch me take a shower, mom, sit with me while I take a bath. And so I spent a lot of time in the bathroom, like sit with me while I go to the bathroom, you know? And so watch me on the trampoline. Like, yeah. That's what I would, so it was like, I tuned in because he's physical, but quality time was important.
Yeah.
For her, it was gifts. Okay. And so it was, tuning in when she was at somebody's house and she really liked this orange toothpaste. And so to get the orange toothpaste for her was like, I hung the moon.
Hey there, it's Michelle. Today's episode is sponsored by me. If you're interested in speaking to me privately regarding any parenting situations one-on-one, I offer phone consultations and online parenting courses at my website, michellegams.com, and I'd love to help. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Totally.
And okay. So it doesn't mean, because I just went and did something with him and watched him on the trampoline, oh, I've got to go feed that to her.
Right.
So it's that may help you feel cleaner in your interactions with these four, because there's insatiable needs in terms, but you can do it more, I just like to say efficiently. Mm-hmm. It's like, because there's a bullseye.
Yes.
And then you continue. And so it's like, okay, that's really significant for her, or that's significant for him. And let me tune in to that. And don't even try to do it equally. Give that up.
So when trying to figure out what each of their love languages is, just because they're so young.
Yeah.
Is there like some, would I ask them questions to determine or
observe them? And, okay. I think it's online now. You can even go on there, you know, like to take the little quiz about what love languages are. And there's a love language for children book.
Okay.
So it gives examples for kids too. So you can try to sort of diagnose it just in observations. Like you can figure it out.
Okay.
Just by what lights them up. Like, cause you can tell, you can just tell. And so anyway, it helped relax me as a mom, because it was, there's no way. I mean, it's like a running on a treadmill, you know, like running on a gerbil wheel to try to go do this. I mean, you just exhaust yourself and it's not even working.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like being just in tune to, okay, this is hers, this is his. And then you, it's like a deposit into their bank account that they can then run from that for a while. Like, and I call it a love cup, that each child has a love cup that they're coming around going, well, somebody put something in this, you know, like you're saying, your 3-year-old, his love cup needs eye contact, needs full presence.
Yes.
Okay. Well, at least we know that. That's great. Like, we know how to fill it.
Yeah.
It's not always available, nor should it be. You shouldn't be available 24/7 for him.
Right.
And we know what it is to fill his little love cup so then he can function from that. But it's helpful to ask ourselves, what have I deposited into this relationship and what am I expecting out of it? Because if I'm only withdrawing from the relationship, it's overdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been any deposits into this to sort of sustain it. yeah. in a way that is, you know, I talk about when, you know, if you haven't deposited into this relationship, say with your 8-year-old, and you ask him to set the table for dinner, he's likely not going to set the table for dinner.
Right.
However, if you've been depositing into that relationship with whatever his love language is, and even beyond that love language, you know, attending to him, interacting with him, listening to him, paying attention, doing something with him, and then you go, hey, bud, I need you to set the table for dinner. You're going to get a whole lot more cooperation.
So that's another question for me. With the 8-year-old, he's one that I feel like is never satisfied with the amount of attention, quality time. It seems very like constant. And he has like big reactions when, you know, we get to watch a show, but it's time to turn the show off.
And then big like, reactions like happy?
I'm so tired, or I can't, you know. Because he wants to do what he wants to do and he wants to watch TV longer. And then I'm saying, we're going to watch TV. And then it's some huge meltdown.
Oh, you mean you're trying to take him off of what he's watching for everyone to watch something else?
No, just turn it off completely.
Oh, at the end of watching it. Oh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, of course. Like, oh yeah. They're in the zone.
To turn the TV off.
Like, oh, they're in the zone. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to interrupt an addiction.
Right. So that's a real challenge lately. But, and we don't do a ton of TV. Usually I let them at some point in the afternoon after we get home from school, we play outside for a little just to kind of wind down. And then.
Beautiful.
Well, yeah, I do our best, but.
It's a harrowing time of day.
Yes.
The transition It's just miserable around the world.
Yeah. And then I'm trying to get dinner ready and, you know. And so that's typically after they've had their wind down time outside, or even playing inside if the weather's not good. But, you know, around 4:30 or so, I let them watch a show for about a half hour. But typically turning that show off is really a challenge, mostly for my oldest.
Okay. Can you involve him? Okay. First of all, timers are great if you can utilize timers because it makes them the authority figure. So if you can set the time, say, hey, bud, we're going to watch this. It goes for, you know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever it is.
Okay. Yeah.
And you can have the little portable timer, you know, like Target digital kind of thing, because he's old enough to know numbers and quantities and all of that. And so, okay, bud, I want you to set it for 25 minutes. So he's participating in this. And set it for 25 minutes. And when that goes off, that's the warning that it's going to be over in 5 minutes. So there's respectful notice that it's going to be ending, that we're going to be transitioning. So then he has a clue, oh, it's going to be ending. He's notified. And then I would like your participation. I would like you to be the one to turn the TV off.
Okay.
Is then empowered and he's participating in this, and you will likely see a shift. It's almost like his chest will inflate with pride because he's empowered. He's part of this. He's owning this. And I got this now, everybody. I'm turning this off.
Yeah.
Instead of the authority figure, the big lady, you coming in and you're interrupting what I love.
Yeah.
And I'm into this and I freaking hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate you.
Yeah,
for interrupting this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and interrupting addictions. Well, okay, that's my synonymous word for any technology or screens.
Yeah,
because they're addicting to the brain. It's a dopamine hit, and so and the phones is a whole nother topic.
Yeah,
but that's why I tell parents wait as long as you can to give a child a phone, because you are asking, you're trying to put yourself between your child and an addiction, because you're going to have to be monitoring this. And good luck, because adults can't even monitor their own consumption with a phone. So how in the world do you expect an unresourced child to do the same? So I'm just saying it's a difficult thing, period, in our culture, in this current age of raising children, that we have this layer of managing technology, and it is the pool in which they swim. This is the world they're in, accepting that reality. And it adds a whole nother layer of complexity to parenting.
So we actually don't have an iPad or anything like that We don't let our kids use our phones. Mm-hmm. Because when we had our third and fourth babies, I relied on it during nursing, like, hey, come and play a game on the iPad. And then turning that screen off for him was a disaster. Yes. And it, even with a timer, I mean, all these things, I'm like, you know what? It is not worth it. We can't have this in our house. It's just not worth it. The only thing that I ever occasionally let them do is like a PBS Kids game on the computer, which even then we can't do because then the three older ones fight over it. And so it's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. And they get enough screen time in their, what they do at school. And so it's just not necessary. However, he does talk a lot about, you know, well, so-and-so, my friends get to do this, or if I go to a play date, you know, we get to do this. And it's absolutely, I have no control of what happens screen time at a play date. The comparison game is starting with him.
Yes.
And so I just keep telling him, and I don't know if you have advice on this, what happens in another home is going to be different than what happens in our home. Mm-hmm. That these are our rules. And we all have different rules.
Beautiful. Yeah. Just do what you're doing, which is qualify. You can hear all that and empathize. So you really enjoyed this game. You really loved, you know, watching the show. I can see that why you'd like that, why that's intriguing or interesting. And then these three words, at our house, is the qualifier.
Okay.
At our house, we aren't ready for iPads. At our house, we're not doing whatever it is. So
video
kids
games.
Yeah, exactly. And the reality is, you will at some point.
Yeah.
It's just the pool in which you're swimming.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're delaying it for as long as you can, because you have these younger kids too, is a beautiful, beautiful thing to me, that what you're doing. Your 1-2-year-old and 3-year-old are going to be more exposed to this technology than your 8-year-old, because by the time your 8-year-old's, they're going to be trickled down and have this exposure. You're protecting the 8-year-old for as long as you can, because you're also protecting the whole brood.
Yeah. Okay.
Like and then they're going to be exposed. The younger ones are going to be more exposed. So wait as long as you can.
Okay.
And kids are resilient and they're flexible. They can adapt to rules in different homes. And of course he's going to import that information. Well, this is, and he's exposed, and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like that he gets exposure to all kinds of ways that homes exist and all kinds of people and all kinds of stimulation and
right. All
of that. And you have every right to define your home how you choose. So yeah. But the first piece too, that's important, is empathize with him, listen to him, hear it.
Okay.
What he's interested in and curious about, and if you can even have your own openness, because it is going to be in your future.
Yeah.
There's no doubt it's going to be in your future, and we have to reckon with this. And I would continue to delay it as long as you can, because you're going to be exposing all of them.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like, keep the Renaissance house as long as you can.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
I really, that's the goal.
Yes. And it's a beautiful one.
We'll see, my other kind of question was, we have a lot of transition happening right now. We're moving from our house right up the road, and we bought some land and are moving into a new house that we built. And it goes in with the technology piece of it. I'm really trying to be realistic about the fact that the older ones are getting older and will have exposure in other places. And I don't, in a perfect world, I would always want my kids to hang out at our house and be like a warm, open, loving place for their friends. But if I delay technology a long time, I keep thinking like, I would much prefer to have quality time than me involved in the mix as much as, you know, if they want to come and hang out with me in the kitchen or I'm doing something else. And it's always on my mind, you know, how can we integrate it softly when that time comes? Like, is it appropriate at a play date to say, okay, boys, you can have 30 minutes doing playing a video game, like, you know, whatever it is. Like, whenever we make that decision that the time is right.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are realistic parameters to put on it?
That's exactly right. And that's exactly how because you're going to be taxed with monitoring this, because there is no monitoring of an addiction, self-monitoring that can occur. I mean, you have to participate in this, because they'll just go for hours. And then what you find, which you already found when they were young, is transitioning out of it, they are very irritable. Very irritable.
Yes.
And so the older that they are, then to be able to observe that, and even with your 8-year-old now, is to be able to say, it's a neutral, it's an observation, it's not a judgment, to say, you know what I'm noticing is that when I give you the iPad or you play a video game and the time is up, the boy that I'm seeing after is very irritable. So that makes me not want to do this tomorrow. So what I need from you, if you want to do this again, is I need for you to be more aware of how you come out of it back into the community of our home. And if you can manage that differently, we'll try this again. We're not going to do it tomorrow. You take a day, like, okay. You monitor discuss this, observe it. And then if he comes and he's cranky and irritable and he's doing the thing, then, you know, you can kind of observe it, give him an opportunity to notice. And then if he continues, we just won't be doing this the next time, whatever that is for you, whether it's tomorrow or this weekend or one, whatever your time frame, whatever the next time is, omit that. And then you get another opportunity for success. That's a logical consequence. It's not, we're never doing this, or I will never do this again, because it's a lie when parents do that. And it's, you need to, there is a consequence, but it needs to be reasonable. And that's reasonable. And it's related to the, you're not taking something away from him or punishing him. It's just the reality of what was with that particular thing.
Okay.
So, and you absolutely, timers, and that he can do the timer. And then if he comes off of it in the right time, when it goes off, if he's able to transition that, and video games, when you jump into that world, it's, well, I have to finish this level. Well, one more level. And so, which is understandable, because it's like you reading a chapter, you want to come to the end of your chapter.
Right.
So there is some, I have compassion for that, because that's just asking a lot to just interrupt somebody's flow of what they're into. Yeah. So there's that piece that you have to kind of reckon with as well, but it will be another layer of monitoring and ownership for him too. And then if he's able to, then we'll continue. If he's not, then you just omit the next time, whatever that is. And you just keep at it like that. That's how it looks.
Okay.
And it can be, well, you know, like for us, Charlie, cause I have a boy and a girl. And so Charlie, well, obviously was very into that, because that's the pool. There's, I mean, it was so obvious when he's 5 and we're in Target and he has to stop at the controls just to play and it was just like, oh dear Lord, this is so seductive.
Yeah.
At 5, it was obvious. Like, holy cow.
I know.
So anyway, you're doing great. Okay. You're doing great.
So my 6-year-old is like a very old soul. She needs her. I feel like when you were saying earlier about parenting them uniquely, she's one that I often think about, like, am I giving enough to her? Like, am I filling her cup enough? Because she's so easygoing. She's a pleaser. She sees her boys on either end of her, who she's very motherly with in like a sweet way, you know, have these meltdowns about certain things. And she just kind of looks at me like, you know, with bewildered eyes, like, what is going on right now? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I'll just say, you know what, if this is too overwhelming, which, you know, when August is having a meltdown about the fact that he wanted five grapes and I gave him five grapes, but he doesn't actually know what five is yet.
Mm-hmm.
So he's screaming that he wants five grapes, and it's just sending Audrey into, I look at her and I say, why don't you go up to your room mm-hmm. for a couple of minutes and maybe draw at your desk or do mm-hmm. something. She told me the other day that she loves to express herself with her artwork, and she's learning how to write now.
Oh.
So she writes these little things, and
uh-huh.
I have to decipher what she's saying. But
beautiful.
But just, I sometimes, it's my own like mom guilt or worry that I'm not like filling her cup enough because she tends to be the easy kid.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't shout for attention constantly.
She's not the greasy wheel.
No.
The squeaky wheel yeah. that needs the grease. Right.
Right. She's yeah. not, that's not her. She, you know, I just don't know. I feel like the love languages could be really helpful with her
mm-hmm.
To try to identify whether, you know, what is it is that fills her cup.
Mm-hmm. Good. You'll find it. The fact that you have this awareness already about this is the child that is kind of could get lost in here because she's a middle mm-hmm. also and middles, yeah. middles. So birth order affects our personalities. It just
okay.
does.
Okay.
And so an oldest has a specialness by their birth order. A youngest has a specialness by the birth order. Middles, that ain't special. However, she is... She is the first girl.
Yeah.
So that helps that it's not a second. Like it's just studying what is
yes.
in the dynamics of your family. And so then it's being more intentional sometimes about meeting the needs that aren't met in that birth order.
Okay.
So and the same goes for your youngest, that you might need to be more intentional about opportunities to lead
okay.
for a youngest because they don't get opportunities. They just get opportunities to follow. An oldest gets a whole lot of opportunities to lead and make decisions and be responsible and participate and all of that. And a middle can get kind of lost.
Yeah.
And so it's what you, the fact that you already have that awareness of, I need to really be intentional with her and notice her and attend to her. Because she's not going to squeak about it. That's all you need. You already
have
it. The
most she ever says is, Mommy, at bedtime, Mommy, I just feel like I haven't gotten a lot of alone time with you lately. And that's about as much as, and I'll say, you know what? I'm really glad you just said that. Well, let's make sure tomorrow, if it's a weekend, that we go do something together. Okay. Even if it's going to Target. Like
that is the most beautiful exchange that you just had right there. You're an amazing mother.
Oh, thank you.
You are.
That's
exactly. You have a child who's able to articulate. Let's just break this down. Unpack this. You have a child who's articulating her needs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge thing, the fact that she does that. She has a mother who is able to receive and hear it. And then not just hear it, but actually attend and respond to it. That is the most beautiful, perfect exchange of parenting right there.
Okay. I've never really thought about that.
Way to go.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I yeah. admire that.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I spend so much time like trying to balance my own responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then some days at the end of the day, I'm like, I was so impatient or I was short with them or whatever it may be in that day. Or I, you know, stressed out about a situation that has to do with our business or mm-hmm. opening another office or whatever it may be. And there are times that I think I'm wearing too many hats. Mm-hmm. I'm not able to fully be each thing the way that I want to be it. And motherhood, I think at the end of the day, is the most important of all of the hats that I'm wearing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like work, if you will. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. really work, but it's
oh, it is.
Something. Yeah, it's like
it's the hardest job to ever love.
Yes. I think I think that that's a struggle within myself, is like going to bed at the end of every night and thinking like, okay, maybe I didn't really do my best today, or I was super distracted because of, you know, this issue that we had going on, or my husband's really stressed and I tend to try to be a fixer. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to really work on not doing that so much and letting, you know, him and our staff figure things out. And because I'm not there, I can't do it. I need to be present where I am. Mm-hmm. But it's really challenging for me sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then the phone is a perfect distractor. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I'm super overwhelmed and I can feel myself, like I kind of can't handle any of it, I'll just get out, you know, I'm like, mm-hmm. I'll just look at Instagram. Mm-hmm. Just to like calm me down for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But then in my own awareness, I think there are other things that you need to be doing to calm your, like healthier things that you could be doing. So I sometimes beat my, and a lot of moms do it. Mm-hmm. Every mom does it, mm-hmm. but beat myself up in ways that I probably don't need to be doing that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you have any
advice. I love you saying that. But you're aware there it is. I'm beating myself up in ways that I don't need to be.
Yeah.
The minute you have a child, mother guilt is ever present. It's a gift when you have a child, which is the, have I done enough? It's ever present. Mm-hmm. And so to give yourself a break and be kind to yourself about what enough is, because we are never 100% of anything all the time. For instance, I'm a friendly person, except when I'm not. I'm a really good mom, except when I'm not. I am a good manager of this business, except when I'm not. That perfection and existing at 100% is unrealistic. And so it's recognizing that except when I'm not is part of it.
Okay.
Except when I'm not. And there's permission in that, in your humanity.
Okay.
Because, by the way, you're modeling that for your children.
So in the moments when I don't model like good self-control, or I yell at the kids, or I'm just like, enough, I need a break. Like I said that the other day, I'm like, I need a break from you guys. You are making me crazy.
Yes. Beautiful. Take the break.
So in a situation where I do lose my cool and totally yell at them, or yell back at my 8-year-old when he's throwing a fit, and I'm not like in my mature, level-headed mind, what are ways that I can, like, I always typically go back and say, I apologize that I lost my cool, but what are other, do you have other like tips or techniques for ways to just handle that with the kids a little bit better, or address it?
It is so beautiful. Again, what you're doing.
Okay.
You're repairing it. You're saying, you know what? I'm really sorry that I did that, or what, like, and I'd like to try this again, or I'd like to spend some time with you, or whatever repair that you choose to do. If you choose an action of any kind, or just an apology for what I've done, you know, I'm sorry is not a full sentence. I'm sorry for finished sentence.
Okay.
You know, but you're already doing it. You're repairing. And again, look at what that is modeling for your children, that it's okay and human to mess up and make mistakes. And we take time to regroup, to calm ourselves down. And then we come back and we repair it. That is the most beautiful modeling. Instead of we ignore it, we blame, we attack.
Yeah.
There's so many other options in there. What you're doing is like beautiful modeling, beautiful parenting. Okay, so Meredith, I'm writing this book. It's almost done. It has been sort of in me for like, six years. And it is a very, very simple concept that I want every parent out there to understand. And it applies here. just don't do D and you're absolutely okay with parenting, like perfect parenting, just don't do D. So the concept is that in every situation with your child, you have A through D options. A is textbook best case scenario. Should you have the time, resources, wherewithal, patience to do A, this is the best route to do this. Okay. B is, it's the good enough option. It's the 70, 80% option. Given the context of all that's occurring right now in this situation, B is the best I got. C is do no harm. C is you're driving me crazy. I have got to exit stage left. I got to go lock myself in the bathroom. I got to go take a walk. I got to go look at Instagram for 5 minutes. Whatever it is you need to do to take care of yourself, to get control of yourself, to, because we are 100% responsible for what we say and what we do, no matter what is done to us.
Right.
This whole concept of you yelled at me, I can yell back at you. You hit me, I can yell, hit you. No, I'm 100% responsible. If you hit me and I hit you back, I'm 100% responsible for that. So we are modeling that for our children. So to do no harm, to not yell, not shame, not humiliate, not spank, not hurt them, means I have to get control of myself. Do no harm. Shut up. Say nothing. Do nothing. Great. D is harm. D is yell at them, shame them, humiliate them, hurt them, all of that. D. So A through C all work. A through C.
Yeah.
It's great parenting.
Yeah.
Just don't do D and we're good.
Okay.
We are really good. So it's like, I want every parent to like have the smile that you have on your face right now, which is like permission. I don't have to do A all the time.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
It is not realistic.
Yeah.
It's not realistic.
But what happens when you do D and you
fix it just like you did?
Okay.
You repair it because we're going to do D.
Right.
It's going to happen. It's just, can we do A through C more often?
Yeah.
And then when we do D, repair it.
Right. Okay.
And give yourself a break. And please use that tiny model in your head. And I hear parents say all the time, Michelle, I didn't do D. I didn't do D. Perfect. That's exactly it. Great.
Yes.
You walked away. You said nothing. That is great parenting.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
when you go and you lay your sweet head, Meredith, on that pillow at night and you're like, well, I was short with them. Okay. That was B. Or I had to leave the room. Great. That was C. I didn't do D.
Yeah.
Okay. Right on.
Okay.
Right on. Yeah. And sometimes A happens. And isn't that delightful?
Right.
Isn't that delightful? But we are not serving a daily dose of A all freaking day because it is not realistic.
Yeah.
And you're not human.
Yeah.
But that is what the expectation is that is out there for parents, is that this whole Instagram culture of it's all perfect and I have to do it perfect and we all have perfect kids and perfect families. And it's not true. It's not accurate.
No.
And that is why I want this message that I want every parent to get this relief from this simple message of A through C all work, just don't do D. And so I'm writing the A's. Like if you want to, that's why I say in the book is read no further. You don't have to read any further. You've got the concept.
Right.
If you want to know what the A's are, keep reading. Otherwise, just use the concept.
Right.
Just give yourself a break. Just don't do D.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah.
We are really good with these beautiful four children you're raising. If we don't do D, and if we do D, fix it.
Fix it. Okay.
So you are so beautiful at this already.
Like manageable, doable.
Yes. Yeah. See, like you already look lighter.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's all I have to do?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And when there are a lot of moving parts, all the time. And then, so a lot of moving parts within the actual family and then all these, you know, external things that, you know, it's like, let's open another office. Let's build a house. Let's, you know, and there are things that we're choosing to do and they're exciting. And I feel like that's where I need to really build in time during my day, whether it's figuring out a way to take my almost 2-year-old to, have a babysitter come in or something to allow me the time to be intentional mm-hmm. when I'm with the kids mm-hmm. and when I'm doing my work stuff. Mm-hmm. Finding that balance is still a struggle, but I think that it's ever changing. That's the thing with owning our own business. It's ever changing. So these different opportunities arise and I'm like, you know, oh, okay, let's do that. Let's follow that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you've said again is so sage and wise that it is ever changing. Nothing stays the same. So your children and your, this environment at home is the same. This whole finding balance is always going to be the invitation.
Okay.
It's always going to, where is my balance with this situation, this context of okay. what the snapshot is of my life right now? What is that? Where do I feel like balance is for me? Which way am I leaning too far out that I need to pull myself back in, that I feel it? I feel more centered, or I feel more solid or grounded in this place. I feel like I'm a little too far out over here, or I've invested too much there and I got to pull myself back. That is an ongoing invitation of sort of self-awareness for yourself to keep asking that of yourself. Okay, I feel like it's pretty balanced right now, and I'm gonna lose it tomorrow or
right.
next week or this year didn't feel yeah. balanced or whatever. But that's the question or the invitation to keep sort of monitoring with yourself what that is for you.
Okay.
And I wish that it was an arrival state.
Yeah.
You know, like we arrive there and we stay there. It's not.
No.
It's a fluid thing. And it's always being tweaked of what that is, because you're going to keep having new, like you said, opportunities, challenges with this external life and business and your partner and all of that. And then you're going to have children whose needs keep changing and ages, and developmentally they keep changing. Mm-hmm. And so as you've seen in the 8 years of your parenting yeah. already, and that's going to keep evolving. So your balance is going to keep changing as well, where that is for you okay. based on those realities in your unique life.
So one thing we haven't talked about is, mm-hmm. you know, my partner, my husband, yes. You know, I'm home with the kids so much, you know, more, he's at work from 6:30 to 6:30. Mm-hmm. And so he gets, you know, the time, bedtime, all of that. I feel like, at least in our house, I'm kind of like the leader of the kids. Like, okay, we're going to, what mom does and what mom models, and that's kind of what goes. Like, but at the same time,
you're the primary parent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, at the same time, you know, he gets really like special time on the weekends and tries to do fun things and stuff like that. But when there are work things where he's really distracted or maybe isn't able to be really present when he is at home, I feel like then that's when tension will arise. Like, here I am trying to stay on track, like, mm-hmm. you know, like the little general of the army.
Yes.
And I can be a little kind of bossy probably sometimes, mm-hmm. but just, I mean, I don't know if you have any advice on like how to, we make a great team, mm-hmm. but I think just the younger years with parenthood, I think are definitely more mother heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's been played a very large role, I think just being on the same page is so important for us.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with technology. I mean, that's like a huge, mm-hmm. you know, he loves to play video games.
Aww. So he's going to have two partners.
Right. Someday. I know. I'm like, but wait, there has to be a parameter with this. Like, you can't just go play video games all day. And we don't, like I said, we don't have them yet, but mm-hmm. you know, what, like, do you have any advice for helping stay on the same page or?
Yes. Take the parenting class.
Okay.
That's what's reported after the class is 5 weeks. It's a 5 week class.
Okay.
Is couples feel closer as a couple because cool. they feel like they're on the same page. Because what happens when you learn this, it's like you're learning a third perspective, not your perspective, what was done with you, not what's done with him. You're learning this third party platform that you both typically believe in and endorse.
Okay.
And so then it becomes, like you said, closer as a team to how do we implement that? And how can I help you in that situation? Remember what we learned, and how can I help you in that when you want? It's like a, because you're trying to implement this, this other, like what you've learned, because we only get the class to get them out, Meredith.
Yeah.
We get the class to get them out. And then every, and everybody knows that moment of terror that they had. Everybody has their moment of terror, which is, it's in the hospital, it's leaving the hospital, it's in the car, it's upon arrival home.
Right.
It's usually one of those four where it's, what the hell are they thinking, giving me this child? Like, I have no business having this responsibility.
Right.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You get the class to get them out. If you can take a class to do, learn, what do I do with all, because, and then parents are all relaxed. They're like, I feel so much more confident.
Yeah.
Because I know what to do now, just like we're doing right now. Like you go, oh, okay, I'm on the right track. I'm doing this well. Okay, well, this, we could implement that tool. We could do that, that idea now in that.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, that's my first, that's what comes up first, of course, is here's a third party platform that you might want to consider.
Okay.
And is he, if he's receptive.
Oh, yeah.
To you too, like your, that really helps a partnership if you're the primary parent and he comes home and he's a receptive party, which
Definitely.
Is up to him, then.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
It, and goes a long way toward your success as parents together because he's able to receive, okay, this is what you're doing. I'll be consistent with that or help me understand this, what we got going here, or how did I get us off the rails over here? Because some partners are not so receptive.
Yeah. He is receptive.
That helps your house be a whole lot more.
So when is the next parenting class?
It's in a few weeks, April 10th.
Okay.
April 10th.
Great.
Yeah. So I'll give information. It's on my website, MichelleGams.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But, anyway, a 5-week, 15-hour class, and you get information that's like more than you need. And you just decide what you're going to use when in your toolbox.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really nice.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what we're doing now. Except just you get it all.
Yeah.
Together. Everything I got.
Yeah.
Together. And you, by the way, are already a stellar mom.
Thank you.
Stellar. You're a rock star, in fact. You are.
Thank you.
I never said it would be easy. I only said it would be worth it. Peace to you, mom or dad. It starts there. You've got this. If you'd like to be a guest on our podcast, you can email katie@getparented.com. Katie is katie@getparented.com. And if you didn't catch that, the email is listed in the notes from this episode. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please leave us a review and hit subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. Thanks for joining us here each week. The fact that you are listening to these indicates that you already are an intentional parent doing the very best that you can. Keep it up. See you next time.